Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Hump Day!
Yeah.
Hump Day!
Yeah.
Hump Day!
Welcome!
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Dustin the Great. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. I had to just wait.
Boot out of the booth. I got booted off the island.
And Country running the production in the booth tonight. We got a great show for you guys tonight. All things poker to talk about. There's lots of fun things going on. And I had an interesting conversation that I'd like to see if any of you can relate to. Talking about, have you ever used a mistake you've made to your benefit? So maybe think about that. How do you capitalize on those mistakes, or do you just get embarrassed and run away from the table? So we're going to talk about that. And of course, Valentine's Day is on the rise. What is it, Sunday, gentlemen?
Yeah, coming right up.
I assume you boys should know, since you have, you know, diamonds and flowers and chocolates and everything.
Wait a minute, that's this week?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
So since we have to scramble last minute to get reservations.
That's exactly right. For that special lady, that special gentleman in your life, we have some fun giveaways. So we have a $20 match play and a $25 gift card that can be used on food and beverage at either property. So you could take your significant other, your date, your friend, your partner, or just a loved one of some capacity to the card room and enjoy some free betting on the house as well as some sushi or whatever you like to eat. So stick around for that. Okay, so I was flipping through the news to find some fun, interesting things that are happening. And I always love it when you come across a weird story, right? And so this one was, there was a study done. Now, I'd like to talk about why and how, like what was the reason for this study afterwards. But there was a study done that Massachusetts gamblers lack knowledge. They are the least educated.
Weird.
Now, why, when and how and why did somebody decide to do this study? But evidently, according to a study conducted by a Canadian psychologist specializing in gaming behavior, which I think is kind of interesting, Massachusetts gamblers don't really know the rules of the games they're playing. Hey, guys, maybe check the book or read the rules. But evidently, they conducted a study. Dr. Richard Wood conducted a study of 1,500 gamblers that had played in a casino within the last 12 months. And he used an online survey to ask them questions about, just all sorts of things. Questions about personal responsibility, gambling literacy, honesty, and control and pre-commitment. And basically what he extracted from all of this is that most people do not know the game that they're playing.
In Massachusetts,
that they are very confused about what they're playing.
I thought people were supposed to be smart in Massachusetts. I thought that was the smart state.
Only 28% of the people, 28% of the population were literate in terms of gambling knowledge or gaming knowledge, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I don't know why somebody would decide to use this. Massachusetts?
They have card clubs, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you should probably, maybe he found the wrong 1,500 people. At any rate, I feel like we're going to go to Massachusetts and teach him how to actually gamble. Teach him the rules of the game. Also, Chris Moneymaker signed a sponsorship with ACR, so America's Card Room. Now, if you remember, he was with the Poker Stars, right? For about 15 or 17 years or something? Since the boom?
No, it couldn't have been that long. The boom, he won it in 2003.
Okay.
Oh. Wow, it could have been that long.
Yeah, it was like, I feel like it was that long.
Time flies.
17-year relationship.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So it turns out it was longer
I was off by a decade in my mind, that's all.
So
I missed a decade, sorry.
Yeah, so Chris Moneymaker parted ways with Poker Stars and got picked up by America's Card Room. So he just signed a deal with them. And it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens there. I like watching the battle right now and the fight between online poker and brick and mortar poker to see kind of how people and companies are positioning themselves to take advantage of what's happening during the pandemic. And I think that at the end of this, we're going to come out and see online poker become mainstream again. And brick and mortar poker rooms, I feel like, are going to be thriving more than they ever have. This is going to be like the next boom of 2003 getting through this pandemic.
Well, I definitely agree with the thriving part, regardless of online poker. I think that the brick and mortar places, as we see more and more open up, you know, obviously we're benefiting on the Florida coast, having a lot of the country not having poker right now. However, I think it is going to create a boom. I think as people open up, everybody's just going to be busier because there's so many new players.
There is a lot of new players. And again, it's like, you know, people have had the time and the ability to kind of sit and hone their skill again, being home in front of their computer instead of worrying about needing to be, you know, at a card room. And so you're seeing a little bit of that mini boom again. And I feel like you're getting a younger generation, a younger population that's coming forward because they've started to learn the game online and now they're ready to come out. And I think that that's great.
And, you know, also in with that, eventually we'll get this vaccine rolled out and people will be confident and the virus will be subsiding even more. And the older players that we have that have been reluctant to come back, and for good reason, you know, they don't want to go out and do much, which is fine. But once they're comfortable to come back after they've been vaccinated and again, the virus is subsiding, we get that group back also.
Yeah. So I just think you guys are going to see a steady increase in every brick and mortar card room across the country.
Agreed.
So Mattress Max, do you remember? So there's a guy who bet $3.46 million on the Super Bowl.
Nice hit.
Yeah, right. This is the same guy who bet on the Astros. He bet like, what was it? Like $13 million betting on the Houston Astros to win the 2019 World Series. And he said, so this is, he's the mattress mogul in Houston, I believe.
Right.
And he made a bet back in 2019 and said that if the Astros win the World Series, that anybody who had purchased a mattress for $3,000 or more, he was going to give them their money back. So the Astros did not win.
They didn't win, but they, if I remember, they came really close. So he got
scared. It was a huge sweat, yeah.
That he was going to have to refund all this money. So he bet on the Astros as a hedge.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost.
And then they lost, and it was fine. And he lost like $13 million or whatever. But he bet again this year on the Super Bowl, 3.46, and he bet on Tampa Bay with a spread. And so that was a nice little payday for him.
And he didn't even have to give away a mattress.
He didn't even have to give away a mattress. I did like that he didn't have any of those stipulations on his bet this time.
Yeah.
I feel like
he was like, we're going to take it easy.
He's
on
like,
this
he's
one.
Like, oh, I feel like we learned from the last time I did that. And it's not, that doesn't sound like a good thing to do this year.
No free mattresses.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about whether or not you have ever made a mistake and used it to your benefit. I heard a funny story, and so I want to share that with you guys. And then, of course, I have done this a million times. We're going to talk about that. Plus, we have $45 that we're going to give away via food vouchers and match plays so that you can take your date or loved one to Best Bet, hopefully during Valentine's Day, and celebrate. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country in the booth tonight. All right, so we are talking about, have you ever like made a mistake or implemented a play that kind of backfired on you at the poker table, but you've used it to your advantage? And I'm pretty certain that this has happened to everybody. Either you've misread a hand and you rip your hand open with confidence,
yes.
Fancy play syndrome. You suffer from some of that FPS, and you get caught, right? I'm like, what do you do? What happens? What happens to your image? Does it just destroy like how you feel like you are as a poker player? 641-1010 is the phone number. 641-1010 If you have something that happened or maybe your memory is jogged as we start talking about us, call us, give us a call, and let us, let us experience your funny moment with you.
Please. So, I just turn my hand over and go, you got me.
But it's kind of it's a weird thing, right, if you get caught. I'll give you an example. So I'll start with a story in a moment of mine. So I remember I was playing at Orange Park. I went in. It was one evening. I sat down. It was probably like 10 o'clock when I joined the game. So I sat down late, playing 2-5, and quiet, there's not a lot going on in the card room. And I get involved in a hand, and I look down, and I'm in late position. I remember I had position on the person, and I thought I had Jack 9 of diamonds. And I'm in the hand, and I thought I turned 2-pair. I don't remember how the board ran out. I just remember I had turned 2-pair. In my mind, I had turned 2-pair. I flopped Jack. I turned a 9. River card comes. I'm, like, betting, firing. And I, like, check raise the turn, right. Like, all this aggression.
Full
right?
confidence.
Full confidence, wide powerhousing
open.
The hand, right?
She's I'm wide open.
All the chips in as much as I possibly can. And on the end, I'm, like, very, like, thinking a lot about how much can I bet? What's the maximum I can extract? Like, I am trying full on to get max value without getting the guy to fold. He starts hemming and hawing, and I think, oh, my. I'm, like, I bet too much. And I'm, like, just please call, please call, please call. He finally hems and haws over it, and he puts his chips in. And I'm, like, that's right. And I just rip my hand open. 2-pair. Pink. I don't say anything. I just rip it open. And then all of a sudden, as soon as my second card is revealed, I'm like, oh, I'm like, it's the ancient old story. Like, don't forget to check your whole cards, because I'm like, oops, turns out that's not a 9 in my hand. It's a 7 or like whatever it was. And then it's funny because the guy's like, he stands up. He's like, what does she have? What does she have? What? What? And then he's like, goes on this whole tirade about, oh, these kids, they watch poker on TV and they think they could come in and they know how to play this whole thing, right? And I was like, oh, and it's this sinking feeling. I was like, yep, you're right, sir. Sorry, nice hand.
So he had 1-pair with a better kicker or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he could
right?
beat a jack. I think he had like queens. Or it was like a silly thing. I don't even remember what he had, but he
And it is
one
funny because your line probably didn't make any sense based on your actual hand because why
so
would
it's like,
it?
Like in – realistically, had I have had the hand that I thought I had, I played the hand perfectly, right?
Right.
I played the hand perfectly to what I thought I had. He calls, and it turns out that it looks like I played the hand just absolutely like trash.
What if you had the 2-pair?
You played a different hand perfectly.
That's what I'm saying. So, you make a mistake like that, right? Like, I play the hand that I thought I had. I played it perfectly, but it's not what I had. So, how do you use that mistake to your benefit? That guy has no idea that he thinks that I thought I had 2-pair, right? He doesn't know. I didn't tell him. So do you capitalize on that or do you say, I made a mistake?
I see. How do you use that to
your
benefit in that current session?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not lifelong poker theory, but in that current session. Yeah,
I mean, what happened is I just created an image.
You created an image.
Moment.
And now you're thought of as somebody who is going to drastically overplay a marginal hand.
Exactly.
Against somebody who obviously has a slightly better hand or a better hand. Because I'm sure it was pretty clear that he had, either if Jack was, an ace Jack or you were 2 queens, something like that. So you're now perceived as somebody that's going to overplay.
Mm-hmm. So when you're adjusting to that, what do you do, right? Just start massively overplaying your big hands so they look like marginal hands?
Well, you hopefully let a little bit of time go by so that people, it's not the very next hand, and, play a couple small pots here and there without too much big bets, and then hopefully make a big hand and just overplay it.
Mm-hmm. You just got to have it next time.
You just got to have it.
I mean, that's
you don't have to have
it
every time if you're just
going to
make a few standard things that totally make sense and not necessarily overplayed, but if you're going to overplay and, you basically need to have it once.
Do you just need to have it once, or do you feel like you can overplay a lot of hands? See, like, I almost wonder, can you overplay
you
a lot of, like, smaller hands that look like marginal hands? Because they have to be able to beat those marginal hands. So can you just kind of, like, bulldoze over them until they start getting in a call mode? You know what I mean? Like, can you just really start overplaying everything?
No, because I think if your image is that you overplay, you're going to get called light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is what you want. So, you know.
Sure, you want to get called light.
You got to snug it up a little bit for the next hour or two.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just show up with the goods.
But you don't have to have necessarily the absolute nuts. You know, you're going to get called with a, you know, decent hand. You're going to get called by a, you know, a marginal hand because it looks like you have less than a marginal hand.
Mm-hmm. So check this situation out, right? Like, you're in a game and you're sitting pretty comfortable. You're late in the game. You pick up like a jack three. You're ready to pitch it. And somebody under the gun makes it 15, right? Makes a small raise, a 3X raise. And the four people in front of you that call have all been drinking. They're all buddies. They're all there together. None of them know what's going on. And you effectively look down and you think to yourself, self, I posted in this hand. I posted on the button. I'm already in for five. It's only going to cost me 10.
Oh, posted.
And I can see the flop here for 10 extra dollars, right?
Okay.
And so you decide, I'm going to play the
1/3 in rule.
And I feel like I am going to flop two pair or better. This is the implied odds rule, right? I have implied odds that if I make a hand, I can stack any of the players in the hand. So you say, I'm going to flop two pair or better. Otherwise, I will not continue. So you call, right? Flop comes. Jack, 3, 7, rainbow. Juicy. Top and bottom, you flop.
Yep.
Right? So it goes bet. It goes call. You just automatically stuff it. And it folds around to the one guy who snap calls. And he has pocket threes.
Oof.
So now what happens is you have to turn your hand over because he's called you. So you can't even just run away with him flipping it up and chucking it in the muck, right? He wants to see your hand. So he's like, cards up before I show. You have to turn over your two pair to his set. Everybody's seen your hand. Now it looks weird, right? Because you've now played this hand where you, what are you doing in a pot with Jack 3? Why are you in the hand? And why would you play the hands like that? And while you have the information knowing like, hey, the four other guys in the pot are like, right, they're live players. I'm likely to stack them. That's what I'm doing. Now your image changes again. So do you do the same thing in this spot?
I mean, now, again, you're perceived as somebody who will call light pre.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to somehow use that to your advantage.
So do you adjust?
But this is a little bit different. If you're perceived as somebody who will call light, you can now have the opportunity to represent on the turn and river certain hands that come in that normally you would think, well, you couldn't have that hand. Nobody has the, you know, 7-10 in this spot.
Oh, how does that deuce help him on the turn?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. He's the guy that played the Jack Trey. Mm-hmm. He might have a 7-10,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So, yeah. And I think that you could use it to your advantage there. But here's one of the things that I wonder is how quickly do you adjust or make note of the way a player, like their style of play based on that type of a hand that you see, right? So like now you say like, oh, you saw one hand. Are people going to be really more inclined to call you light because they saw one hand?
I think
that
looked abnormal? I think some people are, but I think that's a mistake. I think you can't just judge somebody by one hand that you see them play, even if that hand is an outlier, you know what I mean? Something obscure or out of the norm. I really think you got to be careful judging people by the first hand or one hand that you see them play.
Uh-huh.
And adjusting accordingly.
So how long do you think it would, like, how long before you decide where?
Well, I mean,
you
if you see them do that like three times, mm-hmm. there's a pretty good chance that they're frequently opting for that type of strategy.
What if you see somebody who's playing very aggressively? They're playing fast, they're playing aggressive, they're betting a lot of streets, right? And you haven't seen many hands play out, very few, in fact. A lot of hands maybe go to the river, and this person's winning a lot of pots, but they're not showing down, right? And this is the one hand that they show down after you played with them for about 2 hours, and they've amassed a substantial amount of chips. How do you change and rate them then?
You mean this is the only hand you've seen after,
the only
after
hand,
a long session?
No, I'm saying like 2 hours. Not that long. Like two hours. Yeah. But let's just say maybe they've amassed a bunch of chips. They've been fairly active, pretty aggressive. They're not afraid to put chips in the pot. And that's the only hand you see. How do you now determine what type of a player they are.
I mean, I would now say that they're a player that is able, capable of pulling off lots of bluffs.
So you're going to call light?
Yeah.
So then in that situation, do you just naturally like snug play? You start snugging up the way that you play, or do you just
You don't have to necessarily snug up. You just have to, you know, post flop and turn and river know that they're probably capable of pulling off a bluff because they don't have a hand every time if they're playing that many hands. And just because you only saw one, if it happened to be some sort of rag, it means they're probably bluffing a lot on the turn and river.
What do you think, Dustin? How long does it take you to, like, size up your opponent?
Usually it's not, like, one particular thing. Like, they show up with bad hands. Like, it'll just be, like, a combination of things, you know? Like, somebody, like, they'll just check a bunch of boxes, and I'll be like, okay, this guy fits into this category, you know?
Right.
Like, maybe not being familiar with the lingo, or, like, they might not really know. They don't have their chips stacked very well. Then they also show up with crazy hands, and I'm like, okay, this guy's probably, like, just a novice, like, probably new to the game, just wants to gamble, or... Like the situation where you talked about where a guy's stealing pots from me, and then he shows up with jack three, and I'm like, this guy's just super aggro.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. Then I kind of use like a combination of information to categorize them and compartmentalize what, you know, my strategy for different player types.
So knowing that, do you ever take this stance where if you're on the opposite side, right, and you say, okay, I am creating an image for myself, and it's been the case that you've been pretty active because maybe you've made a lot of hands, right? Like maybe you sit down and the deck smacks you in the face. And so you're just playing very ABC poker, but you've been picking up all these big hands and you haven't been showing anything really, but you're just running over the game, right? And now you're like, okay, well, I'm going to play the rush, and you play a big hand and you're like, I'm just going to play it, just keep betting it and just see what happens. And then you turn over the bluff. Now you do that. Like,
right.
How long do you wait to, like, reveal that bluff to give yourself that edge, or do you ever do that? You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's ways
general rule, if somebody asks, the answer is just never show your cards if you don't have to.
Right, as a general rule.
Because most people are not good enough to make any kind of adjustment that they're looking for by showing somebody their cards. So in this case, you want to show your cards as a bluff to tell people that this whole time all this play has just been fancy play and you've been winning with nothing, when in fact you've had a hand the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is now you're going to get potentially unwanted action because you might not have this continuous run of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And now
do you get concerned about that? I guess that's my question is, like, maybe that's good.
Yeah. You mean concerned about the fact that people are going to perceive you as an over-aggressive bluffer, even though you've had aces the last seven hands?
Yeah. And like maybe you just say, okay, forget it. I'm going to run with this and I'm going to try to, you know, and then maybe the next hand you get aces that the guy calls you and you turn over to you and you make the nuts again, right? Like now what happens? I guess so, you know, there's two pieces to looking at this. A, if you're the person who's on the side that's never having to show their cards and you're getting this big run, right? When do you decide to implement kind of like the switch flip, right? Like maybe people are just like, oh, you're super aggressive, or he's just picking up cards and he's lucky. You can change that by simply showing one hand, it sounds like, because you guys are adjusting to that.
Sure.
So if that's the case, when do you decide that's a good time? And conversely, when do you actually look and say, hey, I'm going to adjust the way that this person's playing based on the number of hands they've shown?
I guess I'll usually show the good hand.
See, that's how I am, too. I'd rather show the good hand. I don't like showing the bad one.
If I've got, you know, I say aces, but just a good hand, right? I've got aces, mm-hmm. seven hands in the last, you know, 30 minutes, and I've won all of them. I'll show it at the end. I'll say, just keep getting them.
Yeah. I'm that way, too. I don't like showing the bluffs. I like showing the good hands.
Yeah, so I just keep getting them.
I feel like it's easier.
That way you can still set up the bluff. You still have mm-hmm. the bluff where now if you show the bad cards, you may take away your opportunity for the bluff later.
Yeah.
Dustin, I feel the opposite. I feel like if you only show the good hands, you take away the opportunity for the bluff later.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, I feel like if you only show the nuts, then you're never going to get called.
Right, but if you're never going to get called, now you have the opportunity for the bluff. That's the point, right? You show like I always have it. I always have it. I always have it.
But how many times do you always have it? Like didn't you almost have never have it. Let's be honest.
Sure.
Like, I never have it.
Right.
Like,
yeah, me
neither. I just like how often do you have it? I'm like almost never.
It's all a balance, you know. It's all sure. a whole, you know, tightrope.
I will say a couple things. You have to be able to adjust your image and adjust your perceived image of somebody else, because mm-hmm. you might be wrong.
Of course.
And you have to know that just because you've seen a guy play for 30 minutes or so, like you're saying, right, maybe they had a great run of cards.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep that in the back of your mind and be able to adjust a little bit and know that maybe he is just a great player, or maybe he's really a bad player that's just getting a great run of cards.
I also feel like it's not good to categorize a player as a whole, because I feel like that is the biggest way that you underestimate your opponent or overestimate your opponent, conversely, right? Is by just saying, okay, Dustin is this type of a player. This is how he plays. So every time he sits down with me, instead of reevaluating the way he's playing that day, right? If I just automatically stick a label above his head, I think that that's bad. So I feel like if you treat everybody as a brand new person that you've never known before, I mean, it's good to know the information in the back of your mind. Like, okay, I've played pots with Dustin before and he plays like this, but today you need to reevaluate him because there's a lot of things that could change. Maybe he's working on something new in his game.
Right.
Maybe he's off his game. Maybe he's been drinking. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's super happy. Maybe just won $1 million and he's ready to splash. Like, there's a lot of factors that could change the way he's playing from day to day. So,
and people do play differently on certain days. I mean, we've seen that with some of our players on the live stream. Sometimes they're just wildly active and totally off the rails, and other times just, you know, passive folding, the same player. You know,
yeah, you're right.
I will say I tend to. I give people labels immediately when I sit down. Immediately.
Based on the way they're dressed?
Yeah, sometimes before they've ever played a hand.
That's funny.
Based on the way they're dressed, based on the way they stack their chips, based on their posture, their attitude at the table, whether they're drinking.
You're a poker racist.
Just sits down. That's unbelievable.
That's right. I sit down and I categorize everybody. Based on
you're an aggro fish. You're a lag fish.
Exactly. You're an idiot.
Stack your chips really nice. You're a pro.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe they're drinking, maybe they're eating, maybe they're, you know, drinking, you know, water and putting green
and eating
tea
saltines. This guy's on the road.
You know, who knows? But I try to categorize them, label them immediately. However, I do know that I have to be able to adjust those on the fly, because I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fun. All right, we'll see how you guys would category. I'm gonna tell you what category I would put each of you in when we come back.
Can't wait.
Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL at 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Room.
I don't know what's going on in here.
What is happening over there?
Allie was like losing her mind over here. I totally forgot about everything that was going on. Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great. All right. I was talking about how I was going to categorize you as a poker player, if I sat down at the table, like, what would I think? Where would I put you in as a player? I would immediately see you, boss, and be like, super tight, passive player. I would just be like 3-betting and 4-betting you all day long. Full on. Like, you would be like 3-bet. I just be like, snap 4-bet. Doesn't matter what I have. Like, just snap 4-bet.
I like it.
Fold.
Yeah. And Dustin, I think I would, like, for you, I would say that you are a tight, aggressive player. That's how I would categorize you. So I feel like I could squeeze things through a little bit easier with you, but I think you'd give more action than the boss.
I would say
that. Because I'm the old guy and he's the young hipster. Is that
perhaps
the deal?
I didn't want to go there, but you said it, so maybe. All right, boss, where do you put Dustin the Great?
Just jumping down, sitting down.
Yeah.
Looking at him. I mean, yeah. it's tough to do when we're not at the table because there's all the other elements of the surroundings and the chips and how many chips they have. But I would put Dustin as a younger player that wants to get involved, wants to
mix it up,
wants to get in there and mix it up, is not afraid to probably make some plays here and there.
You a player, Dustin. You
maybe
a player.
Plays couple,
gamble.
But maybe plays a couple too many hands.
Mm-hmm.
All of the above is pretty accurate.
All right, now I sit down at your table. Keep it clean.
The lady sits at the table. So
the lady sits at the table.
There's all the
I buy her a drink.
Immediately, cocktails. Right. Excuse me, miss. How about some tequila?
Exactly.
Something very strong. No, it's tough to rating the female players. The ladies at the table is the most difficult thing. It's much easier to categorize the men because the ladies, you automatically have all the stigmas of
they're super tight. They don't
super
bluff.
Tight. Yeah. They don't bluff. They can be bluffed.
They're so nice.
They're so nice.
Understudied.
Yeah.
Right. Understudied. They can't play. Mm-hmm. You know, they aren't any good.
Right. We're women.
Right. Mm-hmm. However, that's just so far from the truth sometimes. It used to be in Vegas in the 2040 limit hold'em game. A guy, a good friend, he goes to play in the 2040 game, and it was Denny. Denny Axel. Old friend Denny Axel.
He's playing Carplayer Magazine. Oh, I love Denny.
He says, I couldn't play today. I said, why? He goes, I went to the 2040 game, and they had all these pretty girls that just came up from L.A. and just play like robots, and they're just massively aggressive, and they played way too good.
I don't know what to do now.
I can't handle it. I don't know how to play against them.
So that's hilarious.
So he says, I just got up, and I'll just go do something else today.
Ladies ran him out of the game.
The ladies literally ran him out of the game. And,
that's pretty funny.
That is fantastic.
It is. And it's true, you know. So a lot of times, you know, now you have some of the same categories, right? You have your older ladies who probably you would categorize as your older gentlemen, the same thing. But now, I mean, there's just some tough ones out there, so. Where would I put you? I would say, whew, pretty girl, sits down, smiling, talking to everybody. I would say, don't trust anything.
Don't trust the woman. All right, Dustin.
Allie's a hustler and real, real recognized real. You know, I know right off the bat. You're not fooling me. I know as soon as you said that.
Dustin's like, you can smile at somebody else, girl. Yeah, yeah. I ain't even talking
Allie's,
to you.
Allie's a hustler. As soon as she sat down, I'd just smell it on her. And I'd stay out of her way.
Right, and that's the thing also.
How do you categorize the boss when he sits down?
I mean, my first impression of Jesse would probably be similar to yours. I'd probably be like, all right, you know, standard white guy, probably going to play a little conservative, you know, probably going to be easy to bluff. But you get, you know, it depends on if Jesse's got a bourbon or two, because then his game's going to be wide open, and then it's a little easier. It's a little more fun. Jesse surprised you. After about 10 or 15 minutes, you'd be like, oh, wow, I was wrong.
It's interesting, though, that just the three of us, and while we know each other, but just strictly looking, like if somebody that looked like you, I'm not talking about you, but somebody that has your demeanor, dresses like you, looks like you, you know, goatee, your age, like the whole shebang, right? That's pretty much how I would categorize that type of a person,
right?
Just based on the way that you look and nothing else, which is kind of an interesting thing about poker.
Sure.
And I, you know, as we're starting to come through this whole pandemic, I feel like that is going to be chucked out the window again as it once was, right? When the whole boom in poker initially happened in like 2004, nobody could size up anybody. That was part of what made poker such a success, is because people saw a young kid coming in and it would have been like, oh, this kid doesn't know what's going on. Turned out that kid was smarter than everybody at the table.
Right. They've played 75 million hands last week.
Right. But you're like, oh, I'm a 50-year-old man who's been playing poker my whole life, and there's some young 20-year-old kid who came in. There's no way this kid has the upper hand on me, right? I've been playing professionally forever. And so I think we're going to see that transition happen again. And so sizing people up by the way that they look, and, you know, kind of just sitting at the table to in doing that preliminary view, I feel like is going to be super skewed again.
Yeah, I agree. And
I think it's great. I think it continues to make the game really exciting and and fun.
And I agree. And I think it is going to be different again. Mm-hmm. And we needed something different.
Yeah.
So the positive of coming out of the pandemic is we will have a different style of poker again. And I think that is important. So I will say one thing about your image, and I know that that's my image. I know I am perceived as now the older, tight player.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that because I know that. So you have to know what your what people think of you, and then use that to your advantage.
To your advantage, yep.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good point. You have to be pretty aware of your perceived image.
Sure. Because it really doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
As long as you can figure out a way to capitalize
on it. Way, way out to left field, not even close to how you play at all. But if that's the way the table thinks that, you know, you play, and that's the way they're playing back at you, it's important to be aware.
Right. It's important to be aware of that. Now, I have a funny story about what you just said about the old guy and the young guy coming out of his basement to play 75,000 hands or whatever last week. I was playing, and he probably doesn't even remember this, with Joey Ingram in South Florida several years ago, long time ago.
Oh, this is funny.
In a 2-5 game. And we were just having good – I didn't even know who he was, right? He didn't know who I was. I don't know who he was. He probably still – you know, who knows? Doesn't. But we're just playing a friendly 2-5 game, and we're talking about the difference between online players and old-school players and experience and who's better. And it wasn't a, like, they're better than you, I'm better than you. It was just an actual real conversation, too. Sure. It was pretty cool. And experience. And I said, you know, casually, he was talking about playing lots of hands online. And I said, you know, I have a lot of experience playing poker. I've been playing for decades, right? At that time, you know, maybe 2.5 decades of live poker. And I used to play a ton. I said, but you likely could have played more hands than I have lifetime. And he looked at me very calm, casual, and he says, I guarantee I have.
You're like, oh, said, really?
Oh, really? How's that? He says, well, because I currently have the record for the most hands played in a single day. I said, no kidding.
That'll do
He's
it.
Like,
I said, how much is that?
And that'll
he
do
said,
it.
I played 50,000 hands in one day. I said, you got me.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I mean, that's amazing.
It was the funniest thing ever. And it wasn't like there wasn't an antagonistic conversation.
Sure.
This was a really fun conversation. And I said, wow, that is amazing. And then we talked a little bit about him, you know, doing his multi-table. He played 25, 50 cent, and he had to show a profit. And he eked out a little bit of a profit, but won all the side bets. And
he was like, basically, I had to stay awake and chug soda for 24 straight hours and coffee and play.
And, you know, he quit.
And I made no money.
He quit shortly after like 23 hours or something. He says, I got it, whatever. That's enough. I'm done. Somebody beat him, though. I don't think he held the record very long. Somebody beat him.
Crazy. I like all those bets. Speaking of
fun,
bets, really quick before we take a break, I know we didn't talk about the Super Bowl at all. So congratulations, Tampa Bay. Look, Florida, we're on the rise.
Florida.
Winning football team. Woo. Did you guys make any crazy bets? And what was this crazy bet about the streaker? Because I know we got to talk about that.
Know, it's funny. When you're looking through the prop bets on the Super Bowl, I remember seeing the, you know, odds that there's a streaker, and I just sort of brushed over it. And then all of a sudden, watching the Super Bowl, I went, oh, my God, there's a streaker.
Why didn't I take that action?
And I will say why I didn't take the action. It looks like it was 700 and plus 750, which is only 7.5-1, which is really not that good.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back in time at all the Super Bowls, the past, what Super Bowl is this, 54 or something like that?
Yeah, whatever.
How many times has there been a streaker?
I have no idea.
Has it been 1 out of 7?
I don't even know, yeah.
You know, or how do they come up with that kind of odds? And maybe they can't make it too big, and they probably don't accept too much action on it, because the rumor is, that this guy who did this stunt bet that there would be a streaker.
I heard he piled it.
So you could pile it, right? You could put a whole bunch of money down. If nobody else does it, oh well.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
YOLO.
But hold on. So let's talk about the YOLO with the bet.
But he also had a decoy.
Would they pay him? Because I sort of feel like it's sort of like if you put action on something and then you create it to happen,
sure.
That's cheating, right? I mean, it's sort of like if you say you bet on a boxing match and you fix it and the guy wins, they're not going to pay you. They're going to be like you threw the match.
Right. It's like betting on yourself to lose a boxing match.
Right. Right, right. So,
right.
Do you think that, so if the guy piled all the money and he was the one who was the streaker, are they going to pay him?
Maybe not.
I'm definitely getting my buddy to go place that bet before I run.
Across
the football field without my pants on.
Definitely, you have to have somebody else.
My favorite
place
part
the
is
bet.
How he didn't get tackled and then he slid in.
He slid into the end zone.
Like that was just like.
And then
like,
he just covered up and gave
say?
Up at the end. He goes, yeah. "I did it. It's over. I'm out."
He got more touchdowns in Kansas City.
Touchdown! Yeah, he
got more touchdowns in Kansas City.
I don't know. At any rate, I thought that was
but
funny.
He did
I
it.
Just wonder, like, if you throw it, do they have to pay you?
Can anybody in the chat confirm if this story is true or not? Has anybody read the details?
He had a goofy pink
unitard
on that had the website on it. That guy is rumored to have done weird things in the past for publicity stunts. It's an adult website. And so they paid him to do this.
It's starting to add up.
So he did get paid from whatever that site is. I can't even read it on the thing. And he had a decoy. So somebody tried to go first and caused a little ruckus. And the security went
smart.
To that guy.
That's smart.
And then he jumped and went.
Smart. I mean, if you're going to do it right. You know what I mean?
If
you're
going to
do
hilarious.
It, make it happen.
But also, what is the definition of streaking?
That's a good question, too. Yeah, like how do you
define
that
bet? Does and I haven't looked it up. Does that mean you have to be naked?
Yeah.
If that's the case, no bet.
Right.
He's
just a runner.
He's just a guy running on the field wearing something really silly. Wearing silly clothes.
He's just a partially naked runner.
Right.
Partially exposed runner.
So no action.
No action.
Or loser, really, loser.
Interesting. That's funny. I'm certain they had to define what streaker was prior to taking action on that bet. I did hear this. I'd be curious to know how many people actually bet on the streaker, but I did hear that the most money that was wagered during the Super Bowl is on the coin toss.
You know, I've heard that also.
And I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's true or false.
I don't think it's true. I think that maybe the most bets. But not the most money.
Not the most money, yeah. I mean, I think you're probably right.
The most bets, maybe, but definitely not the most money.
All right, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we will talk all things promotions, put a wrap on the show, and don't forget, we still got that little package to give away with some match play vouchers and some food and drink coupons. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, wrapping up the program. Okay, as promised, Valentine's Day is on the rise here, coming up on Sunday. We want to make sure that you can take a loved one, a friend, a family member, significant other, whatever that looks like, to one of the Best Bet properties and wine and dine them. So we have a $25 food and beverage voucher, as well as $20 in match play vouchers that you guys can utilize. So 641-1010 is the phone number. 641-1010. We will take the fourth caller right now, and you will win that $45 that you can use at either property. And again, it doesn't have to be used on Valentine's Day, but there is a wonderful promotion going on. So if you'd like to head over there and participate in that $1,400 high hands, if you hit a royal flush in hearts, and that is from open to close, in Jacksonville on Valentine's Day, which is Sunday. Lots of other things going on as well. Coming up tomorrow, $1,000 high hands every 60 minutes in Jacksonville and Orange Park from 2 p.m. until midnight. $500 high hands throughout the course of the weekend. And, of course, you guys had such a wonderful winter series that you guys have implemented a brand new tournament series that will be kicking off in March, and that is the Spring Series. So, Boss, give them a nice quick rundown of what that's going to look like.
That is correct. We are going to do the Spring Series in March since the Winter Series was so good. Real quick, before I mention that, don't forget about the GOPO at Orange Park this weekend, February 13th, on Saturday, $300 buy-in. It's going to be a good one.
That's right. Yeah. So if you're a tournament player, Orange Park is a place to be this weekend. You can play the tournament, in fact, in Orange Park and still participate in the $1,400 high hand Royal Flush and Hearts in Jacksonville. If you don't, if you don't win the event.
Well, the $1,400 is good at either property.
Oh, great.
Yeah. The $1,400 Royal Flush on the Valentine's Day on Sunday is good at either property. And the GOPO, the Greater Orange Park Open, $300 buy-in is Saturday at Orange Park. So we're going to do another. So we're going to do the Spring Series. It's going to be very similar to the Winter Series that we just did. We're going to have a 560 opener. We're going to have some PLO. We're going to have a ladies event. We're going to do some live stream. We're going to have
that and more.
That and listen, more. $2,500 main event.
Coming up in March, all you have to do is go to bestbetjacks.com. You can get all of your information there. Don't go anywhere because the Sports Den is coming up next. For Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.